It's Monday, May 3rd, and this could make the first 100 million look like child's play. We start here. With dwindling demand among adults, health experts ask, when are we going to start vaccinating children?
This could be a big step in reopening school this fall.
It could happen sooner than you think, like really soon. A trans icon tells trans girls your critics were right.
This is a question of fairness.
From track races to political races, what makes an even playing field?
Keep moving back!
You thought Brexit was nasty? Try starting a Super League.
They went into the stadium. They went onto the pitch.
How a simple protest became a hostile takeover. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. As of this morning, 103 million Americans have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19. That's 40% of U.S. adults. But the number of vaccinations per week is dropping off quickly.
While more than 103 million Americans are now fully vaccinated, the daily average of shots has dropped 22% in the past 3 weeks.
In fact, in Texas, the number of vaccination appointments plummeted last week by 50%. This week, for the first time, clinics have begun telling the state, we don't need any more vaccines. We got plenty piled up for this week. So in a lot of these states, officials are doing something called micro-targeting.
Physicians like North Carolina Dr. Karen Smith are using micro-targeting, reaching out to individuals at a church, a poultry plant, and a convenience store.
We're setting up trust in the healthcare system, which many of these individuals had lost a long time ago.
But scientists will tell you, there's another huge group of Americans that have not even been approached about getting vaccinated. Because as of right now, they're not allowed to. And there are 60 million of them. We're talking about children.
Give her the vaccine.
Like so many parents, Roshan Murray has been waiting.
She is asthmatic. I wanted her to be vaccinated since day one.
And it's possible that as soon as today, the FDA might give the green light to start administering at least one vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine, to children under that 16-year-old threshold. ABC's Ann Flaherty starts us off, and if we're aiming for that herd immunity number of 75%, that's of the general population, right? And guess what? Kids are more than 20% of our population, right? So what do you do as the adult numbers are slowing?
Yeah, it's certainly slowing down the pace of vaccinations. I mean, it almost feels like, you know, we're running a marathon, we've gotten halfway through, and you look up and, you know, the last few miles are all uphill. So, you know, the next big piece of this is kids.
Children under 18 make up 85 million people in this country. So that's about 20% of the population. And it's a substantial contribution to reducing transmission of the virus.
We're waiting on the FDA at any moment. It could give the green light to the next age group, which would be kids ages 12 to 16. Now, this is really important, Brad, because this would mean that every middle schooler and high schooler in America has the chance at being protected from this virus. Now, if you go back, you know, a few months ago, the CDC put out this guidance on schools that said, you know, you can be in schools and be safe. But these middle schools and high schools do tend to transmit the virus more frequently than younger grades. So this could be a big step in reopening school this fall, is getting those age groups back online.
I was going to say, I thought we'd been told at this point, like, kids are not necessarily the problem. Schools are not necessarily the biggest problem in our communities. So why would they be the next priority if not just, like, lots of adults are done with this? So I guess we might as well vaccinate kids.
So keep in mind that schools aren't known to be super spreaders. When people are sitting indoors, but they're spaced apart and they're all wearing masks, that is true. But what we are seeing are outbreaks in sports.
The team sports where kids are getting together, you know, obviously many without masks, that are driving it rather than in the classroom spread.
It's a lot harder to lock down a high schooler than it is a second grader. So you do see more transmission. Now, you might not be able to trace it to schools, but transmission is more frequent in that age group. Now, one thing to keep in mind, parents will say, well, you know, do we really need to vaccinate kids because they're less likely to get sick? But here's the thing. If they are more likely to carry the virus and to potentially infect others, that means going into a grocery store, they're putting other people at risk. So if you can cut the transmission with the vaccine, that could be beneficial for a community.
Well, so then what's the okay, so you've made the case for vaccinating kids. Like, I get it. I'm on board. Let's go. But, like, what would the hurdles be to that? And crucially, is this vaccine safe for kids? How would we know?
So Pfizer was the first vaccine maker to come on board and to get that green light from the FDA. And almost immediately, they started to give the vaccine to trial participants under the age of 16 between 12 and 15.
While several with the placebo became infected, none of the vaccinated children developed COVID. This is the first released data for children as young as 12.
They've looked at that data and they said it's extraordinarily effective. It's 100% effective at preventing COVID. So they've gone to the FDA with that information.
It's the same drug, like it's the exact same recipe here. There's not like a kid's version of it.
No, at this point, this is the exact same vaccine. And they're looking at giving it to kids under the age of 16, just to see how effective it is. It's 100%.
12-year-old Caleb Chung is part of the trial.
Yeah, I definitely hope we get back to whatever we would call normal eventually soon.
They immediately have gone to the FDA. FDA is looking at this data right now. We expect any day that they could come out and say whether or not they are going to allow this for that age group. Now, I do think that there is one thing to be looking for going forward, Brad, which is that when you get to younger age groups, I think they're going to be a little bit more careful. I mean, younger children are not small adults. Mm. There's a reason why when you look at the Tylenol bottle or ibuprofen, it might say, 12 and up. Biologically, there's not a huge difference between a 12-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 17-year-old. Mm. But when you get into those younger ages, I think that there's going to be just a lot more caution about how you should do this. I mean, do you do it at smaller doses, for example?
In Moderna's phase one trial, all kids will follow up for their second shot after 28 days, and in Pfizer, 21 days later. Researchers refer to this as a dosing trial as they try to figure out how much of the vaccine kids can tolerate and how much they need to be protected.
I know of people who are willing to get the vaccine, were excited to get the vaccine, but then they're starting to pause when they think about giving it to their younger children. I think parents are going to want to see this data up close. They're going to want to hear about it from, every level of the federal government, whether or not they think it's a good idea. They're going to ask questions about whether or not there's any chance at an adverse reaction. I think if there is, I think parents are going to be hesitant because kids are less likely to get really sick by COVID. The risk-benefit analysis is just a lot trickier than it is for adults. With adults, it was no question. With kids, I think there's a lot of questions that they need to answer.
All right. Ann Flaherty in D.C. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, Caitlyn Jenner once told trans athletes to be themselves. So why is candidate Jenner saying something different? We're back in a bit.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yesterday, ABC News and Ipsos put out a poll showing that more than 6 out of 10 Americans are feeling optimistic about the direction of the country right now. And thus far in the Biden presidency, Republicans have not found the most fervent opposition to the president's biggest actions. His infrastructure plan might fail in the Senate, but it's not like it's a total lightning rod. No, the biggest headline grabbers from the GOP have been cultural touchstones, Dr. Seuss, literal red meat, and school sports.
Young girls and women are incensed. that they are now being forced to compete against those who are biological males.
I mean, we're all going to be okay with hulking 6'4" guys, you know, wrestling against girls, do it, you know, it just makes no sense whatsoever.
And so, there have been several debates and even laws passed in state after state this year limiting the rights of transgender people and transgender students. The vast majority have been proposed and passed by Republicans.
The Mississippi Fairness Act is now law.
Well, this weekend, Caitlyn Jenner, one of America's most decorated athletes before her transition, who's now running to be a Republican governor of California, said she agreed with her Republican colleagues on this one, that a transgender girl should not be allowed on a girl's sports team. ABC's Kana Whitworth has been reporting on this. Kana, first question, can you just catch me up on Caitlyn Jenner's position here? Because she has such a history with sports. She's one of America's like most famous sports exports to the world. How did these comments come up?
Hey, Brad. So Caitlyn Jenner had a conversation with reporters in a Malibu parking lot.
TMZ asking Jenner this during her coffee run.
So there's legislation in various states to ban biological boys who are trans from playing girls' sports in school. What's your opinion on that?
And said,
this is a question of fairness. That's why I oppose biological boys who are trans competing in girl sports in school.
She went on to say, it just isn't fair, and we have to protect girls' sports in our schools. This is seen by a lot of people as a movement for Caitlyn Jenner to really align herself with Trump's base, because it wasn't that long ago, it was 2015, when Caitlyn Jenner won the Arthur Ashe Courage Award at the ESPYs.
All across this country, right now, all across the world, at this very moment, there are young people coming to terms with being transgender.
And during her acceptance speech, she said, and I quote, I also want to acknowledge
all the young trans athletes who are out there, given the chance to play sports as who they really are.
So a lot of people looking at her comments as flip-flopping here and questioning perhaps why she would feel this way given her own life experience.
Well, and you've been reporting on trans athletes, trans students over the last several weeks and months. Why is this such a thing this year? Like, it's not as if you're seeing like huge, huge, overwhelming numbers of trans athletes in like the junior high and high school ranks, is there?
No, that's exactly right. We're not seeing record numbers of trans athletes competing, but what we are seeing is people coming to the forefront here trying to pass legislation to ban them from competing. Really, this has been a record year.
This important piece of legislation will ensure that young girls in Mississippi have a fair, level playing field in public school sports.
There have been over 100 anti-trans bills that have been considered. So far, 7 states have passed sports bans.
I want to protect girls' sports, and I think the people of Arkansas and really across the country understand that if you're going to have Title IX, if you're going to have importance of women's sports, there has to be some level of integrity.
But what's also coming on the heels of these bans to keep trans athletes out of women's sports specifically are also bills, Brad, that are trying to prevent or even criminalize transgender youth from receiving the gender-affirming care that they also need.
A bill passed by the Texas Senate yesterday now heads to the House and says parents who help their children transition to a different sex could be charged with child abuse.
Over the past year, I've seen so much improvement in how I look, and it was just exactly what I needed, because that was some of the main source of pain and sadness for me before.
Well, and I guess, can we even just back up and have you describe what you've learned from some of these trans athletes about what that is like? Because, you know, we hear a lot about how transgender girls should not be in girls' sports leagues because, you know, critics would say, you know, their DNA is different, their bodies have been different based on the way they were born. What is the reality here? What should we know?
Yeah, I mean, it's different for everyone.
A young trans person needs all the support they can get.
I had the pleasure of speaking with Lindsay Hecox, a trans athlete in Boise who is trying to make the women's cross-country team.
Were you going to do the hormone replacement therapy outside of wanting to be on the track team, or were you doing it as a prerequisite to be a part of the track team?
No, I was definitely doing HRT for my own sake, for my own health.
Lindsay ran high school cross country. She presented as male at that time and began her transition after she graduated and has been unable to make the college track team.
You didn't make the team when you initially tried out. Mm-hmm. But you said you didn't think that that was because you're a trans female athlete. You didn't get any of that sense from that.
No, I felt pretty disappointed with my times, actually.
One thing I think that was the most interesting that she talked about was the fact that once she started her transition, she started the hormone replacement therapy, that she believed her body was, it was changing in a way that was slowing her down in racing.
It's not something I was thinking, oh, wow, I'm getting slower, this sucks, but it was good for me to be within the range of female athletes that I wanted to be in.
Keep in mind, the NCAA has had a policy in place for 10 years to allow trans athletes to compete in women's sports, and it requires that they undergo a year of hormone replacement therapy before they can compete. So this has been going on for a long time, but right now we're just seeing these lawsuits brought to the forefront and also focused on younger athletes, not the college athletes.
Well, it makes me wonder that, you know, lots of politicians have had things to say about transgender rights over the last year. Is it different now for these young trans students? Is there something different here about having Caitlyn Jenner say it? Caitlyn Jenner, who won gold medals as an Olympian, is there something different when she says it?
I would say yes. I would say that Caitlyn Jenner's voice is particularly unique in this case, given the platform that she has and the life experience she has and the athletic experience she has. I think it's also important that people realize that only 2% of high school students identify as trans, even less are athletes. So this is a small group of people that we're talking about.
We're not here for a participation trophy.
Brad, we're also seeing cisgender female athletes putting their names on these lawsuits and speaking up as well, fighting for what they perceive as an unfair playing field if they have to compete against transgender female athletes.
Are you worried about the future of female sports?
I think that everyone should have a place to compete and that everyone has a right to participate in sports. But the question is, where is that most fair? And for female athletes, it's most fair for biological women to be competing against biological women.
The American Academy of Pediatrics has come out condemning some of this legislation, calling the bills dangerous. They're very concerned about the mental health of what this can do for young transgender teens. They say that being involved in sports is not only good for your body, but it's good for your mental health as well. And the CDC has some pretty scary numbers out there that, you know, 27% of transgender teens say they feel unsafe at school, and 35% have attempted suicide.
If we don't let someone live as who they are, would they rather choose not to live?
Well, if I have to be a criminal over this, then that's, I guess, what I'll have to do. I will not lose a child.
All right, that is ABC's Kana Whitworth there. Kana, great reporting as always. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Brad.
A while back, you might have heard me talk about this wild 48-hour period in Europe when millions of soccer fans were told all at once some of the biggest teams in the world are going to start their own league, the Super League.
We just made history. We just made history.
And we told you at the time, you got to remember that European soccer leagues are not like, say, Major League Baseball or the NBA. Every year, if you finish at the bottom of these leagues, you can actually lose your spot. On the other hand, if you do really well, if you finish at the top of the table, you actually get to play in big, prestigious tournaments, and you can make way more money.
It's Ronaldo! Juve still breathing!
These huge clubs like Manchester United, Real Madrid, Liverpool, Barcelona, they were saying, hey, why risk losing that money with a bad year? Here, we'd be permanent members of the league that we founded. Well, you can see why smaller clubs felt left out by this. You can get why those fans are mad. But so were the fans of Manchester United and Liverpool. And yesterday, even after the Super League had been deemed dead, those two teams were set to play. Fans showed up outside the stadium. They're still not allowed inside because of COVID. And that's when things got weird and even scary.
Manchester United fans are now on the pitch at Old Trafford. They were protesting earlier outside the team's hotel, which is also highly unusual.
Some absolutely bizarre images coming out of Manchester, England this morning. Rob Dawson is a soccer reporter with our partners at ESPN. He is based in Manchester. He was on hand as this all went down. So, I mean, Rob, let's start there. What happened?
Well, you're right. The European Super League has been very controversial, and the teams who were meant to found that the fans of those teams have shown their displeasure and their anger at that their clubs being involved in this. The league obviously failed and was the clubs withdrew pretty quickly. But on the back of that, there's been a lot of resentment towards these owners of these clubs who wanted to found this league. And yesterday in Manchester, the Manchester United fans decided that they were going to protest.
Because they're seen as absentee owners, they bought the club by loading debt onto it. They don't show any signs of care for it. And yet this is the thing that dominates the lives of so many of its followers.
And they decided to do it in what would have been the biggest or one of the biggest games in the Premier League calendar, Manchester United against Liverpool. Obviously, fans haven't been allowed in stadiums in England for a year. And obviously, they took an opportunity to congregate and show how unhappy they were. Obviously, it did turn from a protest on the forecourt outside the stadium into something more than that.
We did hear fireworks going off, crackers going off. We've seen coloured flares as well, of course.
I was on the forecourt watching most of this happen, and they congregated around 1 p.m. Around 2 p.m. there was a considerable number of people on the forecourt outside the stadium. The police and security had erected barriers to stop the fans getting anywhere near the stadium, really. The security wasn't great, I must say. The fans found it very, very easy once there was a large number of them to get through the first. I mean, they were simply just metal barriers, really, towards the actual doors of the stadium.
Keep moving back! Move back!
Then you've got sort of thousands of people kind of cramming down towards one entrance of the stadium. And I spoke to a couple of people who made it onto the pitch who said that it was actually, once they got there, it was very, very easy to get inside the stadium. There wasn't much resistance, really, from the security guard and the couple of police that were there.
Oh, my God! United!
Even the protesters were stunned it got to this point, hundreds of them on the pitch.
They went into the stadium. They went onto the pitch. They set off flares and sang songs and showed their banners and then left of their own accord.
Breaking news, and in the last few minutes, it has been confirmed that Manchester United's Premier League game with Liverpool has been postponed.
I think this is great what's happening here now today. It's unbelievable, everyone coming together, probably 10,000 people here. This is going to make a real statement to the club, this. You know.
There was violent altercations with police, isolated, I would say. It wasn't the majority of Man United fans who were involved in this, but once police started to push the protesters back away from the stadium and out onto the surrounding streets, there are images of clashes and fights, I guess you would call it. So just incredible scenes, to be honest.
Well, and like a couple decades ago, we were seeing these battles in the streets between hooligans and the police, right? Hooligans and other fans. I mean, this was directed at their own team, but Rob, what I still don't get is like these fans, they've already gotten what they wanted, right? Like, there is no more Super League. They won that battle. So I'm just trying to figure out, why does this seem to be getting more out of control?
Talking about Manchester United specifically, this has turned into something more than the European Super League. The European Super League was the trigger for their continued protest against the ownership of the Glazer family, who you'll obviously know very well, their ownership of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I've put more money in my lifetime watching this club and supporting this team than they've ever put in, and all these people here as well.
It's something that has been simmering since they took over in 2005. There was a large campaign in 2010 to try and get them to sell. That didn't work. It's simmered away in the background since then. It's never really gone away. And this thing, as the European Super League, has triggered this to all reach boiling point again. So this wasn't a protest against the ASL. It was an anti-Glazer protest about the ownership.
Right. And so there's foreign money in a lot of clubs at this point. But like you said, there's American owners at Manchester United. There's also American owners at Liverpool. What happens next? Like, fans are still not actually allowed inside the stadiums yet. They're supposed to be soon. Could we see more scenes like this?
It is possible that other clubs, Liverpool is a prime example. So Liverpool fans could see what's happened yesterday and decide that they want to do the same.
We're just going to have to keep going and see what happens. I think one protest is not going to get the Glazers out, is it?
We probably won't see these scenes at other clubs quite like this, but it's very, very likely that we'll see other forms of protest at other clubs who are slated to join the ESL.
Right, and you think stadiums are supposed to be opening soon to limited numbers of fans. Does that change because of what we just saw? I mean, obviously, this is all very different from anything we saw at, like, the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. But, I mean, when you see the images of angry crowds pushing through barriers, breaching a famous building, we heard about staffers locking themselves in rooms as intruders pass by. I mean, it's clear that this has become more than just a sports thing. It's about local identity and these folks who clearly see that identity being stripped away. Rob Dawson from ESPN in Manchester. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take one more break, but quick, of all the energy sources in this country, where do you think coal ranks? Think it over. One last thing is next.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
And one last thing. More and more states are transitioning away from fossil fuels like coal. That's a fact. Well, the state of Wyoming is ready to sue them over it. Recently, Wyoming Governor Mark Gordon signed a law that sets up a state fund to sue states that don't want to import as much coal.
Someone thousands of miles from here could flip their light switch on and have no idea it's because we work in the coal mines in Wyoming.
You might be like, wait, like, can my local video store sue me because I'm not buying their videos anymore? Well, this all revolves around a basic constitutional thing called the Commerce Clause. The Commerce Clause says you're not allowed to discriminate against other states by making it harder for them to sell stuff in yours. So if you're in Oklahoma, you can't be like, hey, all non-Oklahoma milk is going to be taxed at a higher rate. Like, ours is going to be cheaper. Wyoming says that is what some other states are doing by being so anti-coal. It's in the middle of suing Washington State because leaders don't want to build a dock for coal shipments on the river.
We are very excited about the opportunity for Colorado to achieve 100% renewable energy by 2040.
It might sue Colorado now over new requirements for renewable energy. You're making it harder for us to sell your people what they want, right? But some legal experts say Wyoming is missing something here.
States, I think we have more than two dozen states now that have established some sort of clean energy standard. And so, you know, what you're seeing is elected officials being responsive to their citizens.
These laws don't say we're done buying other states' coal, we're done with Wyoming's coal. No, they say we're done buying coal, period.
Declining costs and improved performance make wind and solar energy increasingly competitive.
And that's the most troubling thing here for Wyoming. It's not trying to sell something that is better there or cheaper somewhere else. It's selling something that a lot of states say they just don't want anymore.
I love your grit, your spirit, and I love our coal miners, and they're coming back strong.
President Trump rolled back regulations on mining and burning fossil fuels. And yet, last year, for the first time in decades, coal fell to third place in U.S. energy consumption. 600 coal workers were laid off in Wyoming just last year. These lawsuits could go to the Supreme Court, but regardless of what judges say, has the free market already issued its verdict? Hey, if you didn't get a chance to listen to our special weekend edition on Saturday, I thought it was pretty cool. It's still a good Monday listen, so check that out. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.